everybody. It's John Marks from CopsAlive.com, and I want to welcome you to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. I am very excited about today's guest. Today I have one of the co-authors of the new book, The Crazy Lives of Police Wives, with me. My guest today is Carolyn Whiting. Carolyn was a police officer herself for 6 years when she met her husband, Bob. He is a, and they have been married for 25 years, I need to mention that. They were both working at the same police department when they met. Carolyn retired due to a back injury and has been a housewife for the past 22 years while her husband continues to work at the same law enforcement agency where they met. He has over 36 years in law enforcement. I want you to know that Carolyn has a BA in geography and was halfway through her MBA when she left graduate school to pursue her lifelong dream of being a police officer, a decision she tells me she never regretted. Carolyn, welcome, and thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here, and thank you for that great introduction.
Well, I had a little help, but you're welcome. Carolyn, tell me a little bit about how this book came about. I love the title. I love the book. I told you yesterday that I haven't had a chance to finish it yet, but I love what you guys have done. So tell me a little bit about how this book came about.
Well, the book, first I'll tell you about the title, because there are many words we could use to describe our lives. We could call it fun. We could call it insane. We could call it crazy. We could call it scary. We could call it fantastic. And we thought crazy kind of summed it up and gave it the touch of humor that our lives have, because if there's one thing a police wife needs is a humor in her life. So that's how we picked our title. The book came to be because maybe about 3-4 years ago, I was talking to my minister's wife, and she said she was going to a conference where the older minister's wives help the younger ones and teach them about what it's like being a minister's wife and help them into the life. And I thought, wow, why don't police wives have something like that? That would be fantastic. But unfortunately, where I live, they don't. I've since found out some police academies do have training for the families. There are some conferences around the country, but not nearly as much as we need. Right. So I contacted my husband's PBA, and I said, geez, you know, if we could put together a booklet where some of the older wives in the PBA would just answer questions and help the younger wives figure out how to manage this life. And, of course, they thought, well, to tell you the truth, I don't know what they thought, because they never answered my email and ignored the question, because I'm sure they thought, you know, how could being married to me be difficult? Mm. So the idea stayed in the back of my mind. And a couple years later, I was on a Facebook page for police wives, and that I had just stumbled across. And I was on that for maybe about 3 months and I kind of met Carolyn LaRoche there. We weren't really talking to each other, but we were both posting on the same questions and discussion questions, so I pretty much knew who she was. And somebody on the page said, why don't we have a book that helps us figure this all out? And I had chimed in about my story about talking to the PBA, and Carolyn LaRoche also chimed in and said, geez, you know, I've often thought of writing this book. Carolyn has written two other books. She's written two mysteries, The Poor Lucy Fight Club and Double Jeopardy. So writing was not something that was unusual to her. So she and I started talking, and we eventually went off page and started talking to each other about writing this book. And the great part was Carolyn is just pure wife, and I'm former cop and wife. Mm-hmm. So we each brought a different perspective. You know, I can talk. Sometimes I can't get out of that mindset of what the police life is versus just being a pure wife. So she would help ground me in that way, and I would help her see something from a husband's perspective that she might not see.
Yeah.
So we really each brought something to the book. And we decided what we wanted to do was keep it in the social media fashion of people asking a question and other women helping and answering and giving advice. And so it's a nonfiction book with true life women. We asked women all around the country to help us with this book, and we asked them questions, and they gave us their honest answers. And it's an effort to give advice and help the younger wives and even the older wives. I was surprised how much I learned from the other wives. I thought I knew it all, and believe me, you learn a lot. No matter how many years you've been in this life, you learn a lot.
Yeah.
It's a great life, and I love it, but there are there are certain things that, you know, other people don't face, and you're not going to read about it in a women's magazine. No women's magazine is ever going to answer half the questions you have. So that's pretty much how the book came about. I'd be happy to share with you some of the topics we discussed if you're interested.
Yes, absolutely. And before we do that, let me just say congratulations to you. This book and this topic are so important. My background, I started writing CopsAlive.com after one of my friends committed suicide, and no one ever taught me about suicide in the police academy. We never talked about it when I was working. After I retired, I heard that two of our adjoining agencies had police officer suicides, and even throughout my career, I saw what the job can do to officers. I saw what it can do to families. And when I started writing Cops Alive, I started asking for people to contribute about, you know, ways to help. First, it was the officers, and first we kind of had a focus on suicide. But then it got further and broader than that. It's about wellness in general, and it's about taking care of our officers so they can survive the career and get to what I call Ollie Ollie Oxen Free. And then that has blossomed to go beyond that, and we've extended out to families. And I have done some research, and I have looked high and low. And there are some resources out there for wives, and there are some resources out there for families. Even for survivors, when an officer is taken in the line of duty, those resources have only grown in the last 10, 15 years beyond small grassroots organizations. So, you know, bless you for what you're doing, and keep up the good work. And I hope that the book is not the beginning, but really not the end, but the beginning of a long process. So I've looked ahead, but please tell me a little bit more about what's in the book and why you chose to talk about what you chose to talk about.
Well, I'll start you with the easy topics and some of the common problems. What we did was we monitored the police wives' Facebook pages. There's several of them. Mm-hmm. For the most discussed topics and the questions women are asking most often, it seems to apply to everybody. And though, you know, so we stuck to things that women really wanted to know. And one of the things, the most simple things, what to get my husband for police academy graduation. Mm. Because if you're just getting into the life, who knows all the gear they could possibly need? So we asked women, and they suggested things like belt keepers for the older guys, and I know younger guys don't use them, but holsters and police watches with the, you know, their insignia. St. Christopher medals. One woman I thought was a fantastic idea. She got a racy picture of herself and had it done for him to keep inside his vest pocket. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such a nice, loving thing to do for a husband.
Yeah.
One woman said she bought a bag of toy. She bought a gear bag and she filled it with toys and snacks. So if he saw little kids when he was out there, he could give the kids toys and calm them down.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a great idea.
Yeah.
We move on to different other topics. We talk about all when you're new to life, and even when you're not. You get lonely when your husband works 4 to 12. How do you deal with that? You know, you feel like a single parent because your husband's working and you're home with the kids all the time. And what do you do to keep yourself busy? And we talk about, for me personally, me time. You know, I look at my husband's 4 to 12, and he's going in tonight 4 to 12, and that's me time, and I love it. But when you're first dealing with it, you know, it's a little hard, but then you learn to say, wow, I can put my pajamas on at 7 o'clock if I want to, and I can drink a glass of wine and eat a bowl of chocolate chips for dinner if I want to, and I can put on girl TV. And he's not going to complain when I'm watching a marathon of, you know, The Real Housewives of somewhere or some other girl show. I can do all that. I can go out to dinner with friends. I can do activities. If he's working days and I'm home all alone, I can go do things he hates. So that's it. You have to learn to change your mindset of I'm missing my husband to this is me time. This can be fun. I can find a way around this. And a lot of women worry about sleeping alone. You know, and I think it's partly because we have a different sense of the danger in life because our husbands are constantly telling us about the crime out there. So we're a little nervous being home alone. And the thing I found with females, you know, women staying home when their husbands are at work, dogs, guns, and alarms.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dogs out there. Most of the wives are fully armed when their husband's at work, and their house is fully alarmed, and all the doors and windows are locked. But it's it's a way for wives to say to each other, yeah, I do that too, and I'm normal. Or if a wife is new to the thing, she says, oh, it is okay to get a dog, a gun, an alarm. So those are, that's an area that we discuss. And then there's, you know, what, when you say goodbye to your husband, I think there's a common thing out there. We're all afraid what's going to happen to him when he's at work.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we can't give you an easy answer on that. What we, most women seem to be doing, and it seems to help us, is we say goodbye to him. We kiss him goodbye, always kiss him goodbye, always tell him you love him, and watch him drive down the street. And as he's driving down the street, we say a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
We put it into God's hands, and then we get about our day. And you kind of have to compartmentalize and just say, okay, that's done. Now I have to go about my day. I'm going to put my pajamas on at 7. I'm going to watch girl TV, and I'm not going to obsess about it. You know, and if your husband's going to be late, he'll call and tell you so you don't worry about the knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we deal with that. We talk about shift work and holidays because most, you know, some jobs are shift work, but not that many work around the clock and work the holidays. So we learn not to fight it anymore. You have to kind of go with it. Do your cleaning when your husband's awake. You know, you can't clean the house at 10 in the morning if he got off at 8 in the morning and he's going to sleep for the next 6 hours.
Yeah.
So find a way to make it work. Maybe, you know, you do your house cleaning at 10 o'clock at night when he's going to the 4 to 12s. Or maybe, you know, you eat your meals differently because it works with his schedule. And you keep your kids out of the house whenever possible if your husband's sleeping. We also talk about how do you talk to your husband after he's had a difficult day, because some wives don't want to hear about the difficult day, but your husband needs to talk about it to get it out, because if he doesn't get it out, he's going to go crazy. And he needs somebody to come home to and talk to. And so you develop the habit of talking about his day, even if he didn't have a bad day. If you get him talking about his day every day, then when he does have that bad day, he can also talk to you about it.
Yeah.
And one officer, we also interviewed a few officers, one was retired, and he said what worked with his wife was he spent time explaining every detail of the job, you know, what this division does, what that division does, and how they work together, and what it means to do this and that. So when he came home and talked about stories, she completely understood. And my husband tells me all about all the guys on his squad. So I know everybody in the squad, their personalities, and so, you know, my husband can tell me about a call they were on, and I knew if he says Steve was doing X, I can totally envision it because he's told me all about Steve. We also talk about what you do on the holidays. And, again, no easy answer on that one. Sometimes in my family, we celebrate birthdays, but it might be 3 months later. But we're going to have it when my husband's there. Some families, Christmas is celebrated December 22nd. Maybe it's celebrated December 28th. But
yep,
they wait and have it when the husband can be there.
Yeah.
If your husband works in the town you live in and you're lucky enough, he can stop home and celebrate the holiday if he's not too busy. So that's an area that's really important that women need to talk about and vent and understand.
Yeah, and probably a lot of them didn't see coming. They may not have thought about some of those things when they got married.
Or you don't think about it. You can deal with it when you're young and single, but when you have kids, it's a little harder. You know, because your kids want to open their presents at 6 in the morning, and if dad's at work till 8 or 9 in the morning and doesn't get home and he wants to go to bed, it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an area that, even if we can't give you a good solution, it's a, wow, been there, done that, I'm not the only one going through this.
Yep.
Which I think really helps, too. You know, if you know you're not the only one suffering this, or trying to figure it out, then it helps.
Well, and I think that's the power of your book. You know, you've said there are a couple of organizations out there, but we know they're not, you know, reaching all the police wives. There are many of them that probably feel completely isolated and completely alone unless their agency or some of the people in their agency reach out. You know, your book may be the one thing that they're going to grab onto once they find out about it.
I hope our purpose of writing this book, and I left this off in the beginning, our purpose was solely to help other wives. It's not to line our pockets.
Yeah.
And because of that, all the money will be donated to a police-related charity.
Wow.
So, you know, for the first 2 months, thanks to our readers, we've made $500 that we're donating to a police charity. And each quarter, we will donate whatever we've made that quarter to a different charity, and we will post on our Facebook page how much we donated and where we donated it to.
That's cool.
We want full disclosure.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, and it's just, we really just wanted to help police families. This wasn't about getting rich, because that's not where we were on this. We really just wanted to help other wives and other families. So,
before you go on, can I go back just for a second? You mentioned an issue that I think is really important, and I'd love to get your opinion on it. You talked about, having the officer, whoever that is, talk to their spouse after a hard day. And one of the things that's come up in some of our training is that it's awfully hard to get the officers to talk sometimes, because there's a couple of issues there. One is the spouse may not want to hear. And the other one is the police officer, the law enforcement officer, may not want to share for fear that they're going to frighten their spouse even more. And so I think there's a tremendous opportunity here for discussion. But I would like to hear your perspective, because I think people need to hear your perspective about how important this is.
And here's where Carolyn LaRoche came in better than I. And this is because I was a former cop. My husband knows, he can tell me anything.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was the case.
And, he loves it. And I've had other officers say to me, well, your husband can talk to you. I can't talk to my wife because she doesn't understand. So he's really lucky he can come home and talk to you. And the thing that I think struck me most was the officer who retired and said in our book, he had to talk to his wife, and he had to have her prepared to be able to hear it, so he took the time to explain everything ahead of time to her. And, the departments, the divisions, what this does, what that does. And I think wives are stronger than their husbands give them credit for. And I think if the husband is in the habit of, and I'm saying husband or wife, but it could be man, the wife could be the officer.
They're being the protector.
But a husband... And a wife has to let her husband know she can hear it and she can deal with it. And he has to accept that and maybe start small. Maybe, if he goes on a car accident and there's a little blood, just tell her a little bit about that blood ahead of time. And that way, when he comes home with the really horrible stories, she's already heard the easier stuff. And I've often found with my own husband, he's not going to walk in the door and throw his stuff on the floor and sit down and tell me about his day. He needs to kind of get into it slowly. And we have a story in the book about, and it's about my husband. And he dealt with a man that jumped in front of a train and there was gore everywhere. And so when he came home, he got dressed, he changed his clothes, he got himself a beer, and he asked me about my day. And for a good 10 minutes, we talked about silly things like how was my haircut and what did I do, and he needs that time to kind of work his way into it. And so you let him do that. You don't pester him when he comes home. Tell me immediately what happened. Give him time to decompress. And then he started with other stories of his day. He didn't get into the blood matter until later. Maybe 5-10 minutes into his day, he said, oh, and by the way, this happened. So you have to let your husband find his own rhythm, but also let him know you can hear it and you will hear it. And you that's part of your job as a spouse, is to support him and listen to it. And if he needs to talk, just let him talk. And if he wants you to ask questions, and you follow his lead, because most husbands will lead you. And we had one officer who answered a question that said, I don't always want to talk to my wife, but I can't come right out and tell her I don't want to talk about it. And of course you can. If it's something you can't talk about right away, say, can't talk about it right away, but I'll tell you when I'm ready. And then tell her when you're ready, because she can hear it and she can help you, and you need to get it out. You need to have somebody to talk to. And that's what a wife is there for. She wants to hear your story.
Exactly. I've always felt like the families are our first line of defense. They're going to know when our officers are having trouble. They're going to see it first. They're probably going to be able to administer the first bit of first aid if their spouse will open up to them. And that's why I think it is so critical. which I think is a good lead-in because you touch on some very sensitive subjects in the book. And, you know, once again, thank you for doing that.
There are subjects that are near and dear to my heart, too. And as you said, women, they know their husbands. They know if their mood has changed. They know if they're depressed or drinking too much or maybe they're not sleeping well. Maybe they're extra cranky or they have aches and pains that they can't explain, loss of interest in maybe, you know, all their hobbies, or maybe they're physically or emotionally not as intimate as they used to be.
Yep.
So wife, she'll see this long before his coworkers will, and he'll probably hide it from his coworkers, and he may let his guard down with his wife, or he just may not be able to hide it as well.
Yeah.
And I think in most marriages, the women are the gatekeepers for the family health, and they're more likely to make the medical appointments for their husbands.
Good point.
So if a husband is showing any of these symptoms, she may notice it and make the medical appointment for him or talk to him about it. And we put it this in our book, first of all, because it is so important to all police, to all families, period, but especially to police families.
Yeah.
And a wife is going to be the gatekeeper. But if we put it in our book, we thought, you know, if she's sitting on the couch reading this, she's more relaxed and may be more receptive to it than if, you know, she was in, if she was confronted with it, like, you must read this book on suicide. She may not want to read the book on suicide, but she may be receptive to it if it's in this book.
I agree.
So it's a non-confrontational way, and it also reaches somebody who might not realize. You know, she might say to herself, I know something's wrong with my husband, but he's not an alcoholic or he's not thinking about suicide. And she may read the book and say, wow, I didn't realize. So if we can reach a wife in this way, maybe we can get the family's help. And it might be the wife who needs the help. You know, not only is the police officer at risk of all these things, but the wife is at risk of all these things. You know, so we thought it was important to put this in the book. And so one of the things, you know, and we give symptoms, we give a list of resources like the Centers for Disease Control website for all of these sensitive topics of alcoholism, suicide, and domestic violence. But we also, to me, the most important thing was we talked to and had people give their thoughts that have been through these situations. And by that, I mean we have on alcoholism somebody named Pete C., who is a retired police officer and a recovering alcoholic, talk to us and write a section for us on what his experiences were. And we thought that was really important because if a police officer reads it, he might feel, wow, okay, somebody else went through this. And if a wife reads it, she can say, wow, my husband's not the only one. This is how somebody, another officer dealt with it. And I want to read one section to you because I think it just, it says so much to me.
Please do.
And it's, why is getting help more difficult for police officers? Step one of Alcoholics Anonymous states, we admit we are powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. Can you imagine how difficult it is for a police officer to admit that, to admit they are powerless over anything? People who knowingly put their life on the line every day, admitting that they are powerless, it goes against the grain of everything they stand for. And to admit in the same sentence that their lives are unmanageable, the same people who manage the problems of the public at large on a daily basis admit that their lives are unmanageable, it is very difficult to admit and sadly for some not possible. And that was written by Pete C., a recovering alcoholic. And I thought, wow, you know, I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah.
And it brought my brain to, men don't ask directions when they're lost in the car.
True.
Right? They're not going to ask for help.
Guilty.
They don't ask for, if you send your husband to the store with a grocery list and you ask him to pick up something like sun-dried tomatoes, I promise you, he'll wander for 7 hours before he'll stop and ask somebody. So, you know, how could you ask a police officer to ask for help? I mean, that's just, they're just not going to do it. So it really takes a lot. And it takes, I think, a really supportive wife and a really supportive job for a police officer to be able to make that break to say, I need help. And hearing from Pete and understanding what he went through I think might be able to help somebody else see that maybe there's a way out and it's okay to ask for help. We also talked with somebody named Sandy D, and all I have to tell you, all names, not all names, but many of the names in the book we've changed for people's privacy. But Sandy D's mother was an alcoholic, and she talks about what it was like as a child growing up with an alcoholic mother.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a police wife reading this and you say, geez, maybe I've been drinking a bit too much, I don't want to put my kids through this. You know, and I think it might help women see that, yeah, other mothers are alcoholics, and it does damage your children, and maybe I can get help. And we talked to Erica O, who has a, well, her sister is an alcoholic, and the damage it's done to her family.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to, with that, reach all possible members of the family to see what alcoholism does and that help. And then we give the resource listings and symptom listings to see how you can get help.
Good. Yeah, these are issues that our profession has ducked talking about for decades, and they are really critical because I think they're affecting too many people. There are an awful lot of experts out there that disagree on what our statistics are for the things you mentioned, alcoholism, suicide, domestic violence, drug abuse. Nonetheless, I think we all agree that there are too many and we need to deal with it. And I absolutely agree with you that sometimes you need to be the messenger, not me. Not the agency, but you as another wife need to be the messenger of some of these things. And we all need to agree that, you know, whatever the statistics are, we've got to do something to be better, to be safer, to be healthier. And this whole concept of, you know, wives mentoring other wives is just outstanding. And I commend you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you. And even if it's, I read the book and then my friend comes to me talking about her husband, I can say, geez, that sounds like, here's a section you might want to read.
Yeah.
The other, and I think Pete C. said something perfect in his book, in his little blurb, and that was, he said, whatever the statistics are, if it's your husband or your wife suffering, 100% of your family is suffering. It doesn't matter whatever the national number is. It's your family.
I love that perspective. That's great.
So that's, yeah. So we really wanted to tackle that issue. Domestic violence is another issue that, my gosh, police are never going to admit that happens in their family.
Right. And yet the statistics are staggering, actually.
We know it happens in police families as it happens in all families.
Yep.
And I think part of, you know, a problem for police families, and a wife may feel extra scared about reporting it, is first she might be afraid her husband will lose his job. And there goes the family paycheck. And how do you, you know, how do you even work this out if your husband's out of work? And that's a big fear, and it's, I don't blame a woman for that. But at the same time, there are ways to get around that. There are ways, there are financial aid programs where you can, if you have to divorce your husband, there's financial aid programs to help women go back to school to become self-sufficient. But if your husband beats you, you certainly can't be helpful to your kids and anybody else and yourself. And eventually, if he kills you, you certainly can't be useful. So you really have to get out and protect yourself. And we list many resources. And another problem with women, you know, law enforcement, and I'm not saying this is what happens, but in the back of their minds, they may fear that if they report it to the police, they're not going to take them seriously, or they'll stick up for the husband. That could happen in some departments. I don't think it does, but a woman can have that fear in the back of her mind, and we give her alternative reporting agencies so she can get help without going to her husband's job. And she can stay. And a woman named Kathleen B. in our book talked about her first marriage, and she suffered terrible abuse. And the story she shared, it got to me. You can't read it really, feel it in your heart. But she also gives hope that you can get out. She did. She ended up marrying a police officer, and she's great. She still suffers PTSD from the abuse, but her husband is helping her through that. So that's a big step.
And that's a good story. It's nice to hear some good stories, too, in the midst of some of the bad ones.
They are women. We have three women who talk about being abused, two as adult women and one as a child, and all three found a way to get out, you know, to get help and get protection. And that's the main thing, is to let women know you don't have to stay in that abusive relationship. Even if your husband's a cop,
yep,
there are ways out.
Yep.
And if you're an abuser, you have to get out away from your family and get yourself help, but you have to protect your family from abuse, no matter who the abuser is.
Yeah.
And then the third, sub-suicide, and that's a real tough one and really hard for a lot of people to even think about, never mind discuss. And so we talked to Deppy, who went to the suicide of a fellow deputy, and he says it was the hardest and worst to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been on a lot of suicides, but he said that was the worst. And I'd like to just read a short little bit that he talked about.
Sure, go ahead.
And that is, the pain on the faces of his coworkers, his wife and family, is etched in my mind. Coworkers did an extra caring and respectful job of taking care of the scene and their friend's body out of respect for him, but it didn't change what happened. You never want to go to a fellow officer's suicide, especially if you knew him. I wouldn't wish that call on anyone. And from your story, I know that personally.
Yeah, I also talked to the friends that went to our mutual friend's house when he took his life, and it was devastating to them. So,
and I don't think doing it, they think of that. You know, I think they're in such an awful emotional place that I don't think they intentionally said, let me screw up my friends.
Right, I agree.
You know, but I think if we can reach somebody with this suicide section and make them stop and think and say, geez, I didn't think about the guy who's going to find me, or I didn't think about my wife, or you know, I was thinking my wife would be better off without me. No, she won't.
Right.
And, you know, we have a section from a girl whose father committed suicide. He wasn't a police officer, but he committed suicide when she was a child. And she talks about the damage it did. And, you know, people, I think when they're in that state, they think they're not going to hurt the people left behind, but we wanted to include woman's father, and we have another woman who lost her brother who talks about the devastation it left in her life and the hole in her life and how horrible it was. And if you're thinking about suicide and you read these, hopefully you'll say, wait a second, let me rethink this. Or if you're somebody and you say, maybe my husband's a little depressed, I'm not really sure, stop and get help now. Don't wait until it's too late. And we really wanted to have impactful stories that maybe somebody will think twice.
Yep.
And maybe they'll get the help they need, because, you know, alcoholism can lead to death. Suicide always leads to death. There's no going back. There's no, once it's done, it's done. You can't fix it. Can't undo it. So we really need to reach people in that state. And I think a lot of wives aren't aware that PTSD is a big thing for police officers.
Yep.
And we discuss PTSD, and, you know, until a few years ago, I would have said PTSD, that's a soldier's thing. That doesn't have anything to do with cops. And, you know, or my husband's never been in a shootout. He can't possibly get PTSD. But that's not true. It can be, as you well know, but otherwise may not know, it can be caused by a culmination of events. And, you know, there's the straw that broke the camel's back, and they may be exhibiting the symptoms and the wife doesn't even know it could be PTSD, or her doctor may not know it.
Yep.
So if she can read up on what the symptoms are and that it could be a possible factor in her husband's life, then maybe she can reach out to her husband and reach out to a doctor and say, look, let's look into this. Is this a possibility?
Well, so even less than that, there, you know, many officers that suffer from depression, they may not reach the threshold of a diagnosis for PTSD, but there are a lot of things that a family can do to support their loved one. And, you know, there are a lot of officers that suffer, you know, just below the threshold of where everyone wants to send them to the doctor. But I agree with you. We just need to be on the lookout for those things and your book is a great tool to give them some ideas on what to be looking for.
And yes, we definitely want to reach them before they hit suicide.
Yep, exactly.
But and if we can give them signs and symptoms, if we can give them, this is what PTSD is, let's get it now. You know, let's solve it now before it's too far.
Right.
And part of that also is, as we talked about, talking to your husband about his day and giving him that outlet so he doesn't bottle it all up. You know, because that's, I think, definitely, without that ability to talk, it can really get bad.
Let me interject here. I was going to do it a minute ago. Since we're talking about some of these things, I'd love to give the phone number of a crisis hotline. There are a number of them out there specifically for first responders back east. There are there's Cop to Cop and Cop Line, and all of these are available. All this information is on copsalive.com. But the one that we promote the most is Safe Call Now, simply because they've enacted legislation in the state of Washington that protects the anonymity of the callers no matter where they call from in the United States. And their hotline number, which was started by first responders and is for first responders, most of which are cops that started the organization, it is 1-206-459-3020. And I'll give that again before we finish, just in case somebody's out there listening to this interview and they've got some red flags and they've been thinking about that. I want them to have a resource they can go to right away.
Absolutely. We also list Safe Call in our book.
Excellent. Thanks.
Because it is, and I'm glad you gave the number, because as you said, if somebody's listening and they need help, or if a wife is listening,
yep,
and she sees something, she can get help now.
Well, and I throw that out every time I speak, simply because I think everybody in this profession, families and officers included, should put it in their contact list, because you never know when you're going to need it. And when you need it, you don't want to go scrambling to try to find it. So it's something that I think everybody ought to have in their contacts. It may not be somebody in your family, but it could be a friend or a coworker. We need to have those kind of resources at our fingertips. So I'll give it again before we finish.
Great, great. And that's one of the reasons we want it in the book, too, because even if a wife says, my husband's not depressed, and she has the book on her bookshelf, maybe he's not depressed today.
Yep.
But you don't know what 4 years from now happens. And if she can, I remember reading that, let me get the book and check out. Or I remember Cops Alive, let me go check out.
Yeah.
So if you bring the subjects up now when people aren't suffering from it, they also will remember it and know where to get help when the time comes. So that's what we have on that area. Is there anything else you want to talk about with that?
No, you make it sound like there's so little there, but there is so much there, and it is truly awesome, and I thank you. I know you may have some more things to share. The one question I have left, and you can answer that whenever you like, I'd like to know what's next for you guys and what you're going to do now.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me talk a little bit more about the book, because there
okay.
are other – can I talk about other subjects we
oh,
have?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, because we delve into marriage, and women, it comes up time and again, is badge bunnies.
Mm.
And I assume you know what badge bunnies are.
I do. I've heard a couple of other different names for that, but yes, I know what you're talking about.
I think we have about 10 or 15 names that badge bunnies come by, and women worry about it. Wives worry about badge bunnies. They worry about, and it, in some levels, you know, women find men in uniform, or men find women in uniform, a little attractive.
Yeah.
And women worry about these things. But I wanted to share a statistic that, and I don't like to talk statistics, but we all hear the number that 75% of marriages in police families end in divorce. And that's scary.
Yeah, I've heard many people dispute that. And what I usually say to people is, we don't really know what the statistics are. There is an amazing lack of good, concrete data about our profession. We keep stats every day, all day, and yet there isn't very good data out there about some of the things that hurt us. And I have to acknowledge, I think 75% is high, but it depends on which group you're talking to. And, you know, I've been in groups where had people raise their hands and everybody in the group had been divorced. So, you know, I think it just depends on age groups and the agency and the part of the country. But I think every group I've ever talked to said they're concerned about divorces, whether they've had one or not. And I think it's an issue that every law enforcement family and agency ought to be talking about.
Absolutely. But I think the one thing that gave me hope was I read a study by it was Sean McCoy and Michael Amott. It was using the 2000 census, and the study was called A Comparison of Law Enforcement Divorce Rates with Those of Other Occupations. And what this study did was it looked at the 2000 census, and for various occupations, if somebody was divorced during that census. And it turned out police had a lower rate of divorce and separation at that moment in time than the national average. And so that tells me, do they remarry? Maybe, you know, if you ask 10 people, 10 cops, and they said, well, I'm divorced today, but I was, or somebody else says, well, I'm remarried. But if you're comparing a snapshot in time, police are within range of the average and a little below it. So that gives me a lot of hope.
Yep.
You know, and so, yes, we wives worry about divorce, and we worry that it could happen. And I think that's in all marriages. I don't think it's just police marriages, but we do have different stressors in our marriages than the general population does. But we talk in the book about, you know, don't be afraid of bad bunnies. Most women, wives, have learned to deal with them and don't worry about them at all. So don't put as much fear into them as you might. Having been a police officer, I can tell you a female wearing a uniform is attractive to people who might not find you attractive otherwise. But it is, discussing intimacy, how to get, if your husband is not as loving as he used to be, talk to him. And that, I think, is our number one thing in our book, is talk to your husband, whatever the issue is. If you feel like he's not as affectionate, or maybe he's a little withdrawn, or whatever it is, just talk to him. Sit down and talk. Don't hold it in. Talk.
Well, and as you mentioned earlier, that's a good habit to get into early in your marriage, early in their law enforcement career, if that's the case, because it's a lot harder to build that rapport later on. And, you know, that's good marital advice for anyone, but this profession is different. This profession is more stressful than most.
Absolutely.
And this one really requires extra attention and extra care to keep us all functional and happy and healthy, you know, for the rest of our lives. And, that's why the book can be so invaluable, because I think there are an awful lot of wives out there that just don't even know where to start.
And wives need to talk, too.
Yeah.
Wives need their husbands to hear. And that's where this book, I know guys are going to say, oh, it's a wives book. I don't want to read that. But women need their husband to understand the stresses they're under and to understand where they're coming from. So if, you know, your wife calls you at work a little too much, understand she's worried and she's scared. And if he reads the book, he'll understand his wife and her worries a little better. Maybe he can help her a little more, too. And, you know, hopefully the book can open a dialogue between husbands and wives. And wives will now open up with their husbands and say, I'm scared of this, or I need help with this. And the husband can read the book and say, oh, wow, I understand now where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And also it's a book that can help other wives talk. I've known police wives for, 26 years. And their wives, recently I was at a party and I was talking to a wife and telling her about the book. And she started talking about things like 4-12s and what she did when she was lonely. And we talked about, being afraid of our husbands being hurt on the job. And I've known her 26 years, and we've never once talked about this. And we don't. I don't know why police wives don't turn to each other when we're at a party or when we're, we don't call each other. And hopefully, if this book can open up a conversation between other wives that know each other, talk to a wife and say, hey, I just read this book. Let's talk about it. Do you feel this way, too? Or how do you deal with the 4-12? What do you think of this subject? And if we can get wives who know each other comfortable talking, that might make a big step, too.
Well, and I think there's the other side of that. The officers themselves may be the ones squashing that, because there's all this fear about, oh, if our wives talk, or, oh, if the department knew this, or, oh, blah, blah, blah. There's all this fear in our profession about what's going to impact their career and their ability to do the job. And there's an awful lot of paranoia in our profession, and most of it is unfounded.
Absolutely. Guys have that, or not even just guys. Male and female officers.
Yeah.
officers. I have to be tough. I have to be strong. I can't show weakness. And if I ask for help or if I talk about my problems, that makes me weak. And nothing's further from the truth. And hopefully, you know, they can now start seeing that maybe it's not so bad if you open up and talk.
Yeah.
And we also talk about, we have sections about how to raise your kids as a police family. And that's a whole nother, you know, stress level.
Yep.
And, you know, and do your kids worry about your safety? And I think one of the things I found most interesting was when we talked to the mothers said, my kids never worry about their father being a cop and getting hurt because they grew up with it and they don't know any different and it's fine. And when we talked to the kids, they said, oh, no, I worry about dad.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also an area that I think kids, and that's an area you ask what we want to do in the future, and we've talked about looking into that area. You know, how are kids impacted by the job, and
that's
how can we help them deal with the stresses of the job?
Yep.
Because that's, I think that's an area that's totally left.
Yeah, wide open. And I agree with you. When I've had a chance to speak to some kids, it's the exact same thing. Oh, yeah, when somebody actually asks them, they have a lot to say, but the issue is that many families don't ever ask them.
Because they either are afraid to put an idea in the kid's head, which they're not going to put an idea there. The kid's thinking about it.
Right.
Or they think, oh, no, they're used to this. They grew up with this. They don't know any difference, so they're not worried at all. And so I think if we can get that conversation started with this book, that would also be a really great conversation and a point for parents to now discuss with their kids. The kids' fears, their worries, their loneliness, because kids miss their parents, too.
Yeah.
When dad's at work, kids do miss their father, and they may not come to their mother, or they may tell their mother, but the mother doesn't know how to help the kid. And we have other kids who give advice. This is what I do when I miss my dad.
Yep.
And so maybe if parents read this book, this section with their kids, can be a whole new dialogue.
Well, you mentioned earlier shift work and holidays, and generally that means that an awful lot of the children's activities get missed by the law enforcement officer because inevitably shift work overlaps with the soccer games and the dance recitals and the baseball game and the practice and everything else, and I'm sure it takes a terrible toll.
That, you know, the funny thing was I would think that, but when we interviewed older kids, they didn't really mention the pop wasn't around as much as you would think they would say that. Many of them said, and I know for a fact their fathers weren't home. They said, oh, no, my father was home most of the time.
Interesting.
So they have a rose-colored glasses look looking back, and maybe that's good.
Yeah. Well, as you said, there's a tremendous opportunity there. I encourage you to go forward with that idea, too.
And, you know, one woman wrote a wonderful section about her father would make it her day with him on his. So there's also an opportunity for when dad is off, maybe on a Tuesday, and he took his daughter someplace and spent the whole day with her. And maybe regular fathers can't do that, but because of the schedule, police fathers can find ways to spend time. They miss the soccer game, but they get to take their daughter to camp all day long, or they get to take their daughter to the pool by themselves.
Yep, out to lunch, anything.
So that, you know, there are ways around these kinds of issues, but it's important to have that dialogue.
Yeah, it all seems to come back to that, and that's a great message for the audience to be hearing.
And then I'll give you just three other quick sections because I think this is something all police families have is budgets and how to live on the police budget because cops never make a lot of money, so we have great advice on that. The other thing is, boy, you guys come home with some interesting laundry stains. And we have a whole laundry stain removal section, and I actually tested in my kitchen all these. I took Chinese food and put it on a T-shirt and left it there for 3 days, you know.
I love it.
I took fingerprint powder and sprinkled it on a T-shirt and left it there, and how the heck did I get it out? And then we have recipes, because some women love to bake and cook, and I love to bake for my husband and send him into work with baked goods, as a lot of women do. And we have a big resource section. So I think the book has a lot for, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a new wife or an older wife or you have kids, you don't have kids. We really wanted to take issues that would run the gamut and really help other wives out there manage this whole, in a upbeat, nice way to offer advice, but also to let women know this is a great life. I love my husband. I wouldn't trade a minute with him. And so that's, we're not bashing our husbands. We're saying, look, this is a great life, and these are some pointers to make it better.
Yeah. Well, I think you did a great job, and I commend you, and it's my pleasure to promote this so that hopefully more and more people will be reading it. So you haven't talked at all about, you know, how to connect with you and where to get the book. Why don't you share a little of that?
I would love to. Our book has its own Facebook page, www.facebook.com/thecrazylivesofpolicewives. And we have an excerpt from the book there. We have my co-author, Carolyn LaRoche, also does a blog, and she discusses sometimes police issues. Her blog is named Boys, Badges, and Writer's Block, and we have excerpts from that because that also is of interest to our readers. And then the book is available in paperback and ebook at Barnes & Noble and at Amazon. And it makes a great gift for a police officer to give his wife, or a wife wants to buy it for herself. She can read the book and then share it with her husband. It's a great, you know, it really is a great resource for all.
Great idea.
And if you've read a police wife book, you've probably read more than one book, mystery book, or you've probably read more than one book on how to knit or sew or whatever your interest is. You can read as many books as there are out there, and I think each one will give you a little something to help you through this crazy life.
Well, again, thank you for what you've done, and we'll have a comment section at the bottom of the blog article here so that hopefully we'll get some comments back and we'll drive people to your Facebook page. And I can't say enough about what you've done. I think just the very nature of the book, opening the conversation, is exactly what our profession needs. We need more conversations about a lot of things, but this is critical. And I commend you and Carolyn LaRoche for doing this. Thank you. And boy, if you continue and do a book of stories about what it's like to be the child in a law enforcement family, I think that'd be awesome. So I encourage you to go forth with that if you're going to.
Thank you, John. And I want to thank you for having me on today, and I want to wish you all a safe tour.
Thank you very much. And we will do as much as we can to promote the book on copsalive.com. I want to thank everybody for listening and for being readers of copsalive.com. We try to bring you advertising-free information that really makes a difference, and I'm certain that today's information will make a difference. Get the book, read the book, buy a couple of copies, and give them away as gifts. But I think you need to go out there and start spreading the word. Before I forget, I wanted to remind you that the phone number for Safe Call Now is area code 206-459-3020, 1-206-459-3020. My thanks to our guest, Carolyn Whiting, and to her co-author, Carolyn LaRoche, for writing this book. The book is entitled The Crazy Lives of Police Wives, and you've been listening to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. Thanks, and stay safe until next time.